we have to be very, very careful. What we're talking is not so much democracy, we're talking organised hypocrisy. Hard facts.
In Moscow, in the face of probably the most formidable football nation of the 21st century, in front of their own crazed public and a bewitched world, here comes modern Russia's biggest game ever. 144 million people on this kick of the ball. And Juba scores! And the hosts are happy again! Akinfeev saves! It is Russia's party and the party goes on! Crank up the music! Charge a glass! This nation is going to dance all night!
When it comes to football, or soccer if you prefer, perhaps the great Uruguayan writer and scribe of the human condition, Eduardo Galeano, said it best. I go about the world, he said, hand outstretched, and in the stadiums I plead. A pretty move for the love of God. And when good soccer happens, he goes on, I give thanks for the miracle, and I don't give a damn which team or country performs it. Thus we have the magic generated by the 2018 World Cup in Russia. A carnival not only of football, but of unity among thousands of fans from all over the world, who in their beautiful diversity have descended on the country to make this World Cup, by wide acclaim, the most memorable of any in recent history. They, those fans, have reaffirmed football's unique gift as a force for unity, celebration and joy, providing in the process a desperately needed rejoinder to the attempt to divide humanity along national, religious, ethnic and cultural lines on the part of those for whom domination and exceptionalism is the sine qua non of human progress. Despite the demonization, despite the Russophobia, despite the sanctions, despite the military tensions accompanied by an unending stream of anti-Russia propaganda served up by a clutch of handsomely remunerated Western ideologues, along with a concerted campaign to sabotage the tournament itself, the real winner of this World Cup is the Russian people. They have embraced the opportunity to present to the world a country and society not of swivel-eyed xenophobes, homophobes, nationalists and thugs, as stereotypically depicted, but instead of warmth, hospitality, friendliness and respect. I speak these words as someone who has never accepted the mantra that mass spectator sport, and football in particular, provides an escape from reality, an exercise in bread and circuses designed to dull the masses with mindless entertainment in order to distract them from the real conditions of their existence, fomenting the false consciousness of tribalism as a temporary palliative in lives of dull conformity and drudgery. On the contrary, football is the distillation of reality into 90 minutes, during which the entire gamut of human emotions are on display on the pitch and experienced by the fans watching. A reminder of that which connects rather than divides us. And when it comes to football, the action on the pitch is less important than the interaction among the crowd, for it is there where the innate human need for collectivism, unity, togetherness, and bonds of solidarity is reaffirmed. And in this, a time of rampant free market capitalism, with its emphasis on competition, individualism, selfishness, and greed, the need for such a reaffirmation has never been more important. This World Cup in Russia has not only put Russia and its people on the map, rebutting the aforementioned stigmatization of the country widely proffered in the West, it reminds us that football is still capable of transcending the fixation on money and revenue that has succeeded in poisoning the game in recent years, confirming that it really is the beautiful game. A feast of football accompanied by a carnival atmosphere attests to the abiding truth that peace, comity and fraternity between and among the peoples of the world is an idea whose time has come. I'm John White, and this is Hard Facts. Well, I'm delighted to be joined by Alan Moore. Alan is a Russia-based sports journalist and broadcaster, and he is also the director of the Russian State Social University in Moscow. Alan, welcome.
Thank you very much for having me on, John. And you actually stirred my heart with that opening. Just that you encapsulated everything that's good about football and everything that hopefully this World Cup is going to bring out from Russia and bring into Russia as well.
Thank you very much. Now, Alan, you must feel like one of the luckiest men alive right now being in Russia at this time. I mean, looking on from afar, the atmosphere, the joyousness, the celebratory atmosphere, the diversity in all its wonderful splendour, it really is palpable. What's it like actually being there?
It's kind of odd for me. In one way, I can't wait for it to finish, simply so I can actually get a good night's sleep. However, for me, it's wonderful. It's kind of the culmination of a long, long journey, because I began work with the tender bid for the World Cup with the project team. And
you're actually material involved in the organization of the tournament.
Yeah, I was at the very start. I was basically fact-checking documents, going through documents, making sure spellings and, you know, grammar was correct, and advising on different presentations for the bid, and kind of just the English language side, because of course it was done in French and German and Spanish as well as Arabic. So when our company took part in that in a consultancy role, and then in the last couple of years I've been working with the anti-discrimination programs here, and kind of tried on the educational side as well, not just with fans or with clubs, with players as well. So kind of, I've been heavily involved, and now, of course, I'm commentating on all the games here in Moscow, with the exception of Spartak Stadium tonight. I gave my ticket away for that one. Not for any bad reason, just because I wanted a night off.
Where does your commentary appear, Alan? What's the show that you appear on?
Well, from Capital FM, I go through the day with all the updates. Then we give the in-game live updates with Capital FM, and I'm also doing the FIFA commentary within the stadium.
Okay, wonderful. Now, it seems clear that this World Cup has exceeded all expectations. Is that the feeling among the Russian people themselves?
Massively so. You know, something that you mentioned in the intro is that, you know, there's the very wide, you know, a great diversity of peoples and ethnic groups and languages in Russia. And they've been bonded together through this, and it really came home on Sunday to a lot of people. It wasn't a surprise to me, because I could see it building and building. When quite nearby here, where I'm based in Kyivskaya, and there's a lot of, let's say, Caucasian people, as in from Chechnya, Dagestan and so on, working and living in Moscow. And on Sunday night, they came out with Russian flags, waving them. We're being hugged by, you know, blonde-haired, blue-eyed Russian people, and, you know, celebrating together. Now, that is not a surprise for me. Where I work in my day-to-day main job in the State Social University College, we have created an environment where it, you know, when you walk through the gates of our institution, you are college. You are not from Dagestan, you're not from Buryatia, you're not from Moscow, you are college. And I can see that, because these peoples from around Russia, no matter where they're from, whether it's from Buryatia, whether it's from Ulyanovsk, from Voronezh, from Dagestan or Ingushetia, when they see Russia doing well, they're delighted. So it's kind of like, you know, I'm Russian, but I'm also Chechen.
And Alan, that's an important point you make. Sorry to interrupt you, sir, but it's a very important point, because people seem to forget Russia is a multicultural society. It is
exactly.
Its very foundations are multicultural. So it's not a monocultural society. It is multicultural, multi-ethnic. And so this World Cup seems to have unleashed a celebration of that multiculturalism throughout Russia itself.
Massively so. I mean, I was watching, because I lived before in Voronezh, in the south centre of Russia, in the Black Earth region. And, you know, I was watching videos that friends were taking where there were people watching games. And there's a huge mix of Armenians, Georgians, like who have been living in Russia for a long, long time. And they are just thrilled and delighted, like 15 to 20,000 people watching on a big screen by the replica of God's predestination, the first ship of the line of the Russian Navy built by Peter the Great in Voronezh. And people are thrilled. So you've got all these faiths, you've got all these different ethnic groups from the biggest country on earth. And suddenly they feel Russian. And the only thing that has done this, the only thing that's brought this together is football and nothing else. I mean, Russia win the Eurovision, people might celebrate a little bit. Russia winning the World Ice Hockey Championships, people are happy, but it's usually cold weather when that happens here. Russia doing well in football is bringing the whole nation together. And football is unique in that it can bring people out onto the streets to look at each other and go, I feel proud.
Yes, and proud in a very positive way. It's patriotism rather than nationalism. It's love of one's country, but not at the expense of any other country, whereas nationalism typically is regressive. It's hatred of other countries and thereby trying to foment a sense of domination among countries. Now, it would be wrong to depict this World Cup as one that's been absent of all negative or regressive views or happenings or incidents. Now, I'm minded of the disgusting and despicable footage of England fans in a bar in Volgograd, near Stalingrad, the site of this epic battle in the Second World War that everybody is familiar with. A vast memorial to the martyrs of the Red Army who sacrificed everything in the struggle against fascism. And these England fans were throwing fascist salutes. I have to say, Alan, and I'm not just saying this because I'm Scottish and I'm certainly no Scottish nationalist, but the English national team is followed by that element of mindless, jingoistic reprobates.
Well, I'm sure that a lot of the English, and you know, John, we have to be honest and say it's not just the red tops. Like, we saw what the Sun put out mocking Colombia about a production site for cocaine, thinking it's a big ha-ha when tens of thousands of Colombians have lost their lives or lost loved ones due to these, you know, these like the drug wars there that are still ongoing, of course. And, you know, we, you know, even today, I mean, just before I began speaking with you, I was walking back up from Kievskaya, from this same place, right by beside the McDonald's, where on Sunday night I was sitting there having a coffee, just watching the absolute delight. And there were Spanish fans there as well, because a lot of them are staying quite nearby. And, you know, and this isn't far from the Luzhniki. So a lot of fans mixing around. And there were English fans there on Sunday night. And there were Colombian fans, there were Spanish fans, there were Russian fans. And they were just having fun and talking together and swapping stories. And then as I'm walking down today, I see two English guys come along. They acknowledge me and kind of like smile and nod. And around the other corner come a group of English fans waving one big flag over their heads. I think it was from Swindon. And they start singing, you know, No Surrender to the IRA.
How did they know you were Irish? Did you have a T-shirt on of something that indicated it?
I had an Irish rugby polo shirt on, but I honestly, John, they couldn't have seen it from where they were coming from, but they were doing it anyway, because a friend of mine, also a sports journalist who's based out in Siberia, an English guy from Manchester, he was walking by Red Square not too long ago, like say an hour or two ago, and he heard the same stuff going on. And then they're singing about like about the Second World War, about German bombers and so on. And I mean, honestly, I've been
so disrespectful.
You know, It's despicable and it's wrong, because, you know, we have to think back to 2 years ago, because we think back to 2 years ago when the
Alan, sorry, can I ask you to hold that thought, sir? I'm sorry, we've come right up to the break. You're listening to Alan Moore. This is Hard Facts and we'll be right back.
We have to be very, very careful. What we're talking is not so much democracy, we're talking organised hypocrisy. Hard Facts.
Welcome back to the second half of Hard Facts. This is a World Cup special. I'm speaking to Russia-based sports broadcaster and journalist Alan Moore, who's also a director of the Russian State Social University in Moscow. Sorry, Alan, I had to cut you off. We came up to the break there. You were recounting experience of English fans and some rather unsavoury incidents. Continue, please.
Yeah, sure. So I have great respect for people from all walks of life, and you know, because as my grandfathers, both of them, would always say say to me is that, you know, when you start to look down your nose on someone, it means someone's looking down their nose on you. And, you know, we're all equal. And, you know, seeing this behavior here, I went straight back to 2016, where many friends of mine who were covering the European Championships in France were in Marseille, and they saw from day one English fans beginning their usual chants with the IRA about Pakistanis and Arabs, and they began fighting down with the local French police, down with the local French football fans. Then they attacked some Russian fans and suddenly ran into, like, kind of met their match with these hardcore, let's just, no other way, scumbags who came from Russia to look for trouble. So, you know, but it was all forgotten. The first 2 days where English thugs shame, you know, England in the English media. And then all of a sudden it changed to, oh, the Russians are attacking English fans.
Yeah, they were victims. The English fans were victims,
exactly,
of Russians. Yeah.
So this is the thing that I think is too easily forgotten. And when I've been asked here by a correspondent for you know, one of the biggest satellite broadcasters based in the UK, when she asked me, it doesn't matter what the English fans did before, my remit is to get dirt on Russian fans, as she's asking me to put her in contact with Russian hooligans. So
sorry. There was an English British journalist who was there specifically to try and come up with some lurid stories about Russian football hooligans, and in the process ignoring English football hooligans.
Exactly. And I mean, I have, whether it's been on doping or it's on hooliganism or racism, I report the facts without fear or favour. So if I see there's something wrong, I will say it. And I will have open discussions with Russian football clubs. And indeed, I work, we present our Capital Sports Show from Lokomotiv Moscow. And I've reported negatively on the club in the past when they have failed to follow through on promises or initiatives in terms of rooting out, you know, kind of poor fan behavior and so on, and financial mismanagement. So, you know, and yet they will still say, look, fair enough, you're telling the truth, and I will speak with them openly about it. But this kind of very negative, nasty element that they're seeking out trouble, and I think it's, and they're building up, and they really, really are hope. I've spoken with someone here in the stadium on Sunday who won them from, let's say, a paper of record that has three letters. It's called something. He turned around and said, like, oh, they're all dopers. Or some other bad words. And I said, who? The English? The Spanish? The Russians? Who are doping? And he just, like, said, like, you know who. And he says, don't you worry, we're going to get you. As in, like, Russia, I'm thinking, but I'm not Russian. You know, I'm not Russian.
Let's leave all that negativity behind, because the magic far exceeds the negativity that we've just identified, even though it does exist. As I said in my introduction, the beautiful, the wonderful diversity of so many cultures coming together in a spirit of comity and fraternity really has reaffirmed for me the essence of the human condition. When it's not encumbered with all this poison and propaganda and hatred and demonization of one culture by another, exceptionalism. Now, that has been reflected in the magic on the pitch. Some of these games have been just top drawer, one after another, excitement, drama, right to the end. And there's also been an element of Greek tragedy to this World Cup, in the sense that the big guns, Germany, went out in the qualifying round. Ronaldo's star waned at this World Cup, Lionel Messi's star waned at this World Cup, and then the French superstar, the young superstar, Mbappe's star rose. There's no other kind of tournament that encapsulates such drama in such a short period and with such intensity. Give me your analysis of this magic, Alan. What is it about football that engenders this magic in a way that no other sport does or can?
I think you know, the one thing that I've noticed here, I was very critical, but in a kind of an old man kind of way, that the fans wearing their fan IDs around their necks. So kind of like, you know, you see these guys down in the pub who come from working at Microsoft and they have their swipe card. So the same with the fans here, they wear them around their necks. But when I see Indian fans, of course, whose team aren't here in the World Cup, and they're just walking along with an Indian flag, and then I see American fans whose team haven't qualified for the World Cup, and they're walking with an American flag, and they're high-fiving each other as they're walking down the street, and then stopping and asking each other where to go for a drink. I saw this back 2008 for the Champions League final when Chelsea and Manchester United played. And again, I saw this like camaraderie, this community that the Russians took part in. And now it's greater, it's across Russia. So it's this, you know, the community around the games is amazing. And I believe that that's lifting what we see on the field, where it's just wide open. And of course, football is unique in that you don't, like, the number one team aren't always dead certain to win. Because if it's rugby, if it's New Zealand playing the number 50 team, I think it's Croatia, for example, in rugby, New Zealand are going to put up a big score on them. Whereas Spain, as we saw, who were fading, they're a fading champion. They're kind of like, you know, Frank Bruno on a comeback or something like that. Like that, you know, the will is there, but the punch just isn't. And more punches he takes, it's going to get worse. That's what Spain looked like. And Spain, because they sacked their manager, I mean, this drama before the World Cup, he goes to the, you know, like a reigning Champions League champions. And they fire him, and they replace him with a kind of a Jobsworth, who never really had great success as a manager, Fernando Hierro. And that was notable on the field, where they didn't change it up. And then you look at Belgium last night, where Japan took it to Belgium after defending nonstop. Then all of a sudden, they started to attack and scored two goals. And Belgium played the Japanese way and counterattacked and scored three goals. And the one little kernel in all of this is that, and it's been so unreported, John, is that Japan took on board a Belgian company called Double Pass. I think it was around 8 years ago, something like that, on the recommendation of the German Football Federation. And they have put in place then a development program for players from like little kids all the way up to the senior national team. So Japan started to play like Belgians yesterday.
And the Japanese were absolutely fearless. And they played as a collective. I mean, this is what I mean, Alan. This is one of the few tournaments where my passion for football has been reignited. My passion for football had been long gone because of the money. There was so much of it, and you know, it didn't have the same connection to me or my background as it used to or should as a working class sport. But this, you see players, regardless, say they're all millionaires, many of them are millionaires, many of them are not, who play for the lesser teams, but they're playing for the shirt in a way that they never do for their clubs. And that comes out in the performances.
This is where, when we hear this, we will hear it very, very soon, John. Just we'll have to wait for it, because it will come into the, I hate to say the mainstream media, but like the big, big media who have a vested interest, the likes of Sky or Guardian or BBC, when they start talking about the Premier League and say, oh, like, we don't want these international matches, the playing for the national team is meaningless, the players don't care. That's nonsense. That is an absolute nonsense, because I've spoken with a number of international players here, from Henrik Larsson, who I met at the Russia game, and I just had a
Henrik Larsson, the great Swedish superstar who played for Glasgow Celtic and is one of the icons of Celtic.
Exactly. And I mean, I was surprised. He's still looking well. He's gone quite grey, but he's still looking young, you know, and healthy. And I asked him, would you like to be out there? And he goes, I would give anything to be there. So this is a guy who's won everything. Of course, he played with Manchester United as well. This is a guy who did everything on the field as a player. And he's looking, want to be back out again. And well, you're right.
Gary Neville, the Manchester United legend, he's covering the Russia World Cup for, I think it's the BBC, or perhaps ITV, one of the big mainstream channels. And he sent out a tweet the other day saying, this is the best tournament he's ever experienced. The country, Russia, has risen to the occasion and encouraging English fans to come out, if they could, to the World Cup to experience it for themselves. I mean, it really has removed the veil from all the anti-Russia propaganda in a way that, let's be honest, you know, years and years of Russian media, though it's done a sterling job, has been unable to, because they see that Russia is not this vast gulag, is not this oppressive country that, as it's been depicted. And maybe I'm overstating it, Alan, and please feel free to tell me if I am. But I view this as Russia's coming out party. This is Russia's unofficial announcement that the dark years of the 90s are over, the wounds that were cleaved on Russia as a result of this vast free market experiment that befell the country, they've now healed, and Russia now takes its place as a proud country and a country that has something positive to contribute to the world.
No, I think you're right. And this is the one reason why I accepted because, I mean, we had other people in the office at the very start of the tender bid, because I'd worked on tender bids before, for example, for the 2012 European Championships, which eventually were held in Ukraine and Poland. At the time, I was in Croatia and working in the Croatia-Hungary bid. And I was disgusted by seeing what was going on in terms of what other countries were doing and the bid processes and the people who, you know, people who I thought were above all this and the kind of corruption involved. And then when I looked at the Russian, I was like, I don't want to get involved in this. But then, as it was told to me by one of my sadly he's passed away, but my former boss, he said, Alan, this is going to go down in history. And I said, what do you mean? He said, this will give Russia a big step forward. So get your name on it. And, you know, I you have no resentment, John. I think that this is a chance for Russia to step up and go, do you know what? There's a joke in Alan Partridge, like there's more to Ireland than this. And I think that this is the Russians can say, there's more to Russia than this. And people can actually see it, experience it firsthand, to enjoy Russia and see that, you know, as Sting would say, like, you know, Russians love their children too. And that is a fact. And I think that we have to accept that. Look, John, they're going to be knocked. There are still articles coming out. There's still people writing, even here, let's say British or American journalists who are here. They're here. Well, they're teaching English, and then they get commissions and they write articles back. For the likes of The Guardian and New York Times or Washington Post. And they are, you know, still kind of very snide and slamming Russia. But I think now people who've experienced it, I mean, I met lads from Sheffield, the Sheffield Wednesday fans, and they've unfortunately gone home, met them on the metro, and then met them in the stadium for the France-Denmark game last week, and was chatting away to them. And they're like, we love Russia. We've traveled to Nizhny Novgorod. We've been to Samara. We love Russia. And you know what? We'll come back and we're going to visit St. Petersburg. We're going to visit more places. And that's what Russia needs to do. And the next thing that Russia needs to get its backside into gear for is to work on really making Russia a tourism destination. And that I think will really and truly, you know, blow away the cobwebs and kind of consign the 90s, and that, as you said, that failed experiment, that kind of like free for all that happened here, that was encouraged by a lot of people now who are knocking Russia, made out like bandits at that time in every sense. This is a chance for Russia to say, look, come here, enjoy yourself, it's safe, and just see what a real, true, multicultural, multi-ethnic, multi-faith country looks like.
Alan, very passionate words. Your expertise has been much welcomed on the show. Thank you for taking time out of this celebration and this carnival of not just football, but of cultures from all over the world celebrating one another, celebrating themselves, showing the best of themselves. It really has been an inspiration to me, and I think it's undoubtedly been an inspiration to millions, the hundreds of millions of people who've been viewing it from afar all across the world. Who, finally, Alan, are you picking as a winner of the World Cup at this stage?
I thought that England, because of their manager, mainly their manager, Gareth Southgate, because he refused to get involved in this boycott nonsense, I had picked England to get to the semi-finals, but I'd put my money, well, not literally, I backed Belgium from the very, very start, and I will stick with Belgium. Hopefully Belgium can do it, because I think that they play a fearless game of football, and I think that's what football is all about. It's about going out there and enjoying it like children.
Wonderful. Well, I think the real winner of this tournament is certainly going to be the Russian people. You've been listening to Alan Moore. I'm John White. Until next time, remember, the only facts worth taking seriously are hard facts.